free associating, I think in terms of the total operation, if it weren't for computers, and not only in terms of the minor office operations, keeping track of things, and what I do, but also the printing, mm-hmm. we could never have handled this amount. I mean, now we're getting discs from the authors. Sure. And years ago, the printer tried scanning. He was ahead of his time in that and had with limited success. But now we get the discs, and they edit it just like you're saying on the screen. The authors are very satisfied because you don't get the errors that you get with retyping, and they have the very fast, you know, photographic type printing operations now. No hot lead for many years now, and it's rather incredible.
Do you see the day coming where there won't be a physical volume of the journal?
I think
so. But rather
so.
An electronic one?
I think so, but a long time off. I think so. I mean, I think our CD-ROM shows where things are going. Some institutions like the have carousels in their library where you can put the CD-ROM and pick it up anywhere on the network. It's going to involve all kinds of complicated questions of financing the journal, but I would think that's going to be a thing of the future. When, I don't know. I don't think immediately. I think they'll both live together for a while. You're getting a real, generation gap too. Mm-hmm. Even among the young people now, who are much more familiar with it, there's still a reluctance to do everything on the computer, and people still like to handle the paper. But I think it's getting less and less, and I think people are going to get much more used to using CD-ROMs or the equivalent. Certainly, I swear by all of this. I think it's just wonderful. And the stuff we do at the lab, we just got out of the network at the NIH, and you know, the fact that we can download and instantaneously mm-hmm. so much material, so I definitely think so, yes. But I don't think it's going to be this year or next year or the year after. So I'm not. The same thing went for our pricing on the CD and licensing and worrying about carousels. I don't have the feeling we have to worry about that now. I want to see the technique accepted, and then we can worry about how we pay for it. You see, I mean, but at this moment, I don't think we're at that stage. But some of the business, some of the commercial people have already called us about licensing arrangements for the CD-ROM, because they're perhaps ahead of us in wanting to, you know, to be able to download it to any place in their institutions. But again, I think it's a matter of the future.
I still like to hold something in my
hand. That's what I think most people. Well, there are other aspects that you... And also, of course, the technology of computers is going to get better, too. For example, it's still not that practical. You read an article, and you want to see the references, and you want to turn to that and then get back to the original, mm-hmm. or to thumb through things very quickly. But I think it's a matter of really getting... as I say, you have to be sort of brought up on it, really, to really do it.
You know, I used to tell my students that the one thing that I felt was always important using a literature was to browse.
That's right. And but you see, you can do that in the CD-ROM even better, because you can quickly go down the line, you see. The other thing, though, I think that's important is now with the size of the journal and the size of the scientific literature, you can't keep the journal, say, in your house, whereas if you have CD-ROM, rather. And right now we're selling it very inexpensively to people, to members. I think it's only $45 last year for a year for the 28,000 pages. Jeez. You see, so you can keep all of it available. You see. But there are other conceptual problems that time will have to take care of. For example, do you put several journals? What do you put on a disc? You see, right now we're doing 3 months' worth because you don't want to get a disc every week, you see. But whether or not you've got to have more than one journal or other things on. Then at the end of the year, we also have one issue. The limitation on capacity is the memory that it takes to use figures. There's a lot of scanning. So we can put up to 10 years worth. We only have 3 or 4 years on computer, but up to 10 years of the journal in text only on the disk. So that we can put 10 years worth on the disk, and so you can retrieve by the subject you want, get the title, and then go back to the original for the whole article, you see. But then there are other techniques like you can print out the article too, which is, you know, we're talking about your power book of the centrist. The incredible thing is that even that this is so much more powerful than the most powerful computers were just a few years ago, and that were much more expensive. I mean, after all, this is at the same at the same price range as I think is probably a 512 was when it came out. Mm-hmm. I mean, or that kind of thing. It's just incredible how the technology has developed.
It doesn't take long. It's amazing. I have some questions, or at least some areas that came out of John Edsel's article back in 1980, I think, about 75 years of the journal or like that. For example, he mentioned something about page charges and I just remembered something else, but we'll come back to that. Let's continue on this. Page charges were instituted, then dropped, and put back in because of controversy. Do you have any comments about
that? Well, they were taken out because of controversy, not put back because of controversy.
Oh.
Well, they are controversial. I think they're very important, conceptually and as an additional source of funds and as a buffer. The controversy becomes whether or not it's discriminating against people who don't have grants, who don't have big grants, and just a general concept. I personally have a bias for it for several reasons. One is the charge is small, as research goes. For example, if it's say roughly $50 a page, an average article is 7 pages, that's $350. Okay, if you have a lot of articles, that really amounts to a lot of money. On the other hand, with the cost of any kind of enzyme that you buy, any kind of kit that's bought, most laboratories, I calculate that the average, I've forgotten what it is, but if you divide the average budget, total budget, including the overhead in the universities, or in our case, you know, the total, by the number of papers, it's going to vary with how many you publish a year, but I think an average paper, I'm just guessing, I've forgotten now, is $20,000 to $40,000 a paper, as a minimum, maybe closer to $100,000, you know, when you include everybody from dishwasher salaries and everything. Or the cost, or what have you. And after all, one of the simple restriction enzymes, a little bit will cost a minimum of, say, $40 to $140. So I think it's a very small part of the total cost. I think the concept is a good one, namely that if the federal government is going to be supporting research, the publication of the research is a very integral part, is just as important a part of that as a restriction enzyme. And you don't expect the company that gives you the restriction enzyme to do it for free. It's an integral part of the operation. So I don't think it's unfair in that sense. We also have a system whereby the society will give a grant to anybody whose institution says that the person does not have funds for this. I mean, there are occasional cases where someone's retired and is writing up what they've done, or they've lost their grant, and the society does give a grant for that. It's a small amount. Some foreign countries, the same thing goes for exchange or other reasons. There is one small problem, which I think fortunately is small enough that doesn't enter in, but there are some people, especially in one or two institutions abroad, we won't accept this reason here, but where the policy of their government is that they will, if it's a government laboratory, that they will not pay page charges for publication. But fortunately, there hasn't been much of a problem. But now, the advantages of page charges, it only pays less than a third, maybe now a fourth, of the cost of the publication, perhaps even a little less, I haven't calculated recently. But it offers us a buffer. You see, if there's a sudden change in, which happened once, in paper charges, or some expansion in the number of pages, we can't change the subscription rate right away, because you're committed to that for a year. So this gives you something that you can change immediately. So if we predict that we're going to have a certain loss, we can easily change the page charges and partially correct for it. So that's a very important aspect. The other is, apropos of what I was saying about the CD-ROM, conceptually, we don't know what's going to happen if it gets to the point where technically one CD-ROM will supply an entire institution, we'll have to have other ways of paying for the publication. Now, some people say it won't cost anything to publish because you won't have a journal, but that isn't true. There's all the composition charges and everything else. So those are the arguments, I think, for page charges. But in the past, there has been a controversy.
Who instituted them? Was that you or was that Stein?
I'm pretty sure it was during my time, yeah. But it was done by the Publications Committee at that point. Dan Koshland, I think, was the chairman of it at the time. Yeah. And it took a change in federal policy to permit the use of this. I remember there was a decision of some intergovernmental group. And it still only holds, which is, again, a little controversial, and is coming up again for discussion. I saw in one of the recent articles, even Nature or Science, because the government will only permit it for nonprofit journals. And right now, I gather the journals, the for-profit journals, are asking that they be allowed to have paid charges, and that's getting into more of a controversy. So I don't know what will finally happen. Anyway, that's the background of that. It's no longer. It isn't a major question right now. I think the bottom line is that the libraries are having troubles too. And even though we could increase our subscription charges, we'd rather not. But the bottom line is that you have to pay for the journal one way or the other, either And what we try to do is pay for it in a number of different ways. We do, for one or another reason, have a very efficient operation, and that is that our charges per word, our subscription charges per word, are about 1/10 or 1/15 some of the commercial journals, mm-hmm. some of the well-known commercial mm-hmm. journals. Mm-hmm. So it's, at least that's a long answer to your question. Yeah.
Well, in terms of cost, again, according to John's article, he said the journal continues to publish all papers the editorial board deems worthy. According to policy statement of 1968, there is no arbitrary limit on the number of pages.
That's true. And this is why we'd like to have this flexibility of the page charges, so that if we did take more papers than we predicted, we can cover the cost. However, that's no longer a real factor, because with the simple statistics, I'm never quite, coming back to what I didn't take at college, when you have this number of pages, your predictions are pretty good, mm-hmm. you see. I mean, but we are trying to meet the situation a little bit by urging the editorial board now to, and authors, to effect some condensation and not to take things that are, it's very difficult to make sure that everything they take makes a substantial contribution. And that's a terribly difficult thing, because everything makes a contribution. You never know, mm-hmm. For example, even if you, right now we will not take, let's say, descriptions, say, of the same enzyme from another source, if it's been well described in one source. Well, someday the comparative biochemistry of, say, 15 of these things might lead some very interesting results. So it's very difficult to cut down. On the other hand, one advantage of, I mean, there are, fortunately, it's not the only journal. In other words, there are other places to publish. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that a lot of the granting agencies now care very much where you publish, and so we're under even more pressure to publish things. But I'm very sympathetic with the author who's done a very nice piece of work, and then his paper is not accepted because it doesn't fit this criteria. And frankly, I have the same problem in my own work. When you do something and it's a nice piece of work, and I'm even under more pressure that you can't I don't send it to the JBC if I have the feeling that it fits into that category, and yet that doesn't mean it's not significant, you see.
Kind of an acceptance rate do you have?
Now I think it runs around 60%, but very 55 to 60. That's an amorphous figure, in the sense that only about 5% or maybe 7% of our papers get accepted with no changes at all. So very often they go back to the, most of the time they go back to the author with very good suggestions, I'd like to believe, and it's a better paper when it comes back. So even if it's declined, it may eventually get accepted and be a better paper. And unfortunately, some of our, some people depend on that. And I don't know whether I want to put this in or not, it's a trivial anecdote and I don't remember the name, but it's so many years ago, I think it's all right. But we used to have a handling charge. Parenthetically, when you talk about page charges, the handling charge was of some relevance, because we spend a lot of time and money on handling papers from all over the world, and so some journals have a handling charge, and we did for a while, so that even declined papers will pay. You see, this way, only the accepted pay, whereas we spend even more time on the declined papers in terms of postage. We gave that up, parenthetically, because the overhead was more than it was worth, you know, collecting it from abroad, and so it was $25. Well, once a paper got declined, and I got an letter from an author saying, this was not a very good review, it wasn't worth $25. In fact, it wasn't worth 25 cents. Please send me a check for $24.75. But it is true that we do perform a very real service that I think a lot of our authors have appreciated, and some have written me, that especially those who are isolated, and some have discussed this with me, and don't have any colleagues to really go over the paper carefully. Mm-hmm. And they really depend on our review. It's a little unfair to the editors and reviewers, but we do perform that kind of a service. And sometimes, not too often, we get very grateful letters saying that we appreciate the, you know, the comments of the other reviewers. It was very difficult. I'm very appreciative of the author's problems. You know.
Has the number of submitted manuscripts increased steadily, or is there
steadily?
So it continues.
But as I said, it's about 8 to 10% a year. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, by the way, very interesting in terms of the whole grant question and so forth. You know, and whether we're getting support. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, again, a mixed question. It goes back, I didn't finish what I was saying before, the acceptance rate is not a really, it's hard to evaluate because there's a lot of prejudgment on the part of the authors on what, like I said for myself, even, on what you send. So, in other words, what we get is so much better than, say, what some other journal might get. I mean, obviously, the very prestigious journals, like Biochemistry and others, get the same quality papers we get. But then, if you go to some of the more general journals, or those, you, in other words, you just can't compare the two. If you took the sum total of biochemical contributions, we probably would, our percentage, our acceptance rate would be would be lower. Mm-hmm. So let's see, last question I got off of. Do you
No, I think we answered that. But John, in this same vein, John did comment about at one point there was a, where he used the word, a recurrent desire for smaller, more highly selective journal that would publish only the papers of exceptional interest and importance. And you sort of answered that because you said, how do you determine what's
exceptional? Well, coming back, I remember what you were asking before, and that is, why are we getting more papers or more at the same time? I think one is, as we discussed earlier, techniques are so good that you can press a button, you get a spectrum, perhaps, and you can publish a paper that might would be much better than what you would have done in 1935, let's say. The other is, though, that people are under much more pressure to publish, and that can take two forms. One is they can publish things they know that are good things, but that most of us would have, perhaps even good things, you never get around to publishing. They're a new book, but now if you know your grant's coming up, you publish it. And the third, which is the one that's been criticized, is that people divide their papers and or publish some minor modification and try one journal or another. And so all that. Now, coming back to John's point, we've had a lot less of pressure of that in recent years, even though that isn't the answer. There are two aspects to what you're asking. One is should we subdivide the journal by discipline? That was a real pressure at one point, and still might be. And the answer to that really is that even within the subject matters we have in the front of the journal now, and the associated as I assign papers to, it's getting less and less possible to take any paper and assign it to one person or another. Because, to know which is, because the techniques are so homogenized, they're useful to everybody. In other words, someone working in pharmacology on a adrenergic factor will be using DNA techniques for their cloning and for cloning the receptor and so forth. So we're under and everybody's really, and there are obviously still highly specialized areas, but in general it's hard to divide the papers by categories in terms of a journal. In terms of a journal that just publishes the most exciting stuff, that's such a value judgment that it would be impossible. Mm-hmm. Now, certainly people are saying that, and they say it again and again. Some of our people say, well, if we didn't publish all the junk, we wouldn't have this big a journal. But their definition of junk is what someone else considers is very important material. Now, there's no question that there's a gradation of things that everybody might agree on, that obviously we have a lower 10%, but it's very hard to define that. But that's a different story from saying the most exciting things. No, but I'm to a certain extent expressing a personal viewpoint on that. But the very nature, I think, going back to the very nature, I think the other thing that I think is lost in so many of these things, including a lot of the problems with grants being the way they are now, and that is that if you're only going to aim at the most exciting things, you're not going to do the solid work that very often leads to the most exciting things. So I think it's a very important conceptual thing that we don't push that too hard.